Radio Prague News.
Top-level Social Democrats hold a meeting to discuss their preferred positions regarding a possible government coalition. Former Prime Minister Vladimir Špidla, questioned by Czech police regarding the sale of petrochemicals giant Unipetrol, has said that he saw no evidence of corruption in the deal. And former presidents Václav Havel, President Václav Klaus, and the late cultural minister Pavel Dostal have been ranked highly in a new public opinion poll. On Saturday morning, leading Social Democratic Party members met to discuss their preferred position regarding possible government coalitions. After the meeting, Social Democratic Chairman Jiří Paroubek told reporters that his party still prefers a temporary minority civic democratic government or a grand coalition between the right-of-center civic democrats and the Social Democrats. Less attractive for the Social Democrats is the possibility of a cabinet including the Christian Democrats, though Mr. Paroubek said that if the Civic Democrats justify such an offer adequately, he is willing to negotiate. On Monday, representatives of the Social Democratic Party's negotiating team will meet with members of the Civic Democratic Party, which has been asked to try and form a government again in a second round of government formation talks. Mr. Paroubek says that he anticipates Monday's meeting to include several different offers from the Civic Democrats. Former Prime Minister Vladimir Špidla has been questioned by police over the Unipetrol privatization deal that went ahead under the Social Democratic government. Mr. Špidla, now an EU commissioner, was the last of a number of high-profile individuals in Prague questioned over the sale following an investigation by Polish state authorities looking into bribe allegations. The Czech stake in Unipetrol was sold to Polish concern PKN Orlen in 2004. On Friday, Mr. Špidla, speaking to journalists, said that he had not registered any signs of corruption or improper procedure. So far, all witnesses heard have dismissed the possibility of corruption in the sale. A new poll released by the STEM agency asking Czechs to rate contributions by Czech politicians over the last 16 years has rated Presidents Václav Havel, Václav Klaus, as well as the late Culture Minister Pavel Dostal highly. Mr. Dostal lost his battle with cancer last year. Each of the three received more than 60% positive response from around 1,500 people queried. Politicians rated least favorably in the poll included former Prime Ministers Vladimir Špidla and Stanislav Gross. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The weekend is expected to see rain showers in most parts of the country, with daytime highs of just 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Linda Mastelis, and that's the end of the news.
Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine, Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 10099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Hello and welcome to Insight Central Europe with stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia and the Czech Republic. I'm Kerry Skyring and this week a Canadian company tries to mine uranium in Slovakia but the locals want it stopped. Yet another attempt to give Czechs a government and Poland cracks down on bad behavior in school. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. But first here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thanks Kerry. Czech President Václav Klaus has reappointed Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek as Prime Minister and asked him to make a fresh attempt at forming a new government. Mr. Topolánek was first appointed Prime Minister in August after a general election that left the 200-seat lower house of parliament equally divided between right and left-wing parties. But he failed to win a vote of confidence from parliament in October and was forced to resign after only 38 days in the job. His Civic Democratic Party has launched informal talks on forming a new government. It has refused to hold talks exclusively with the Social Democrats and expects Mirek Topolánek to report on their results to the president next week. Poland is to deploy 1,200 troops in Afghanistan by February, and according to Defense Minister Radek Sikorski, they'll be allowed to operate in the volatile southern provinces. Sikorski said the troops will be based mainly in eastern Afghanistan, but could be used to help allied forces anywhere in the country. NATO has 20,000 troops in Afghanistan and has recently fought fierce battles with Taliban insurgents in the southern Kandahar province. The European Commission this week told Hungary's government it needs better budget control. EU Economic and Monetary Affairs Commissioner Joaquín Almunia said since 2001 there had been slippage in public spending, showing the lack of efficient control mechanisms. Hungary's deficit is expected to reach over 10% of gross domestic product this year. Prime Minister Ferenc Gyurcsány's government has told ministries they'll gain access to certain funds only if quarterly reviews showed they had kept spending within the required limits. Slovakia's hopes of joining the Eurozone in 2009 improved this week with the release of figures showing a fall in inflation. Inflation in October dropped to 3.7% from 4.6% in September, mainly through a fall in energy prices. Economists have expressed concern about inflation, which reached a 20-month high in August. Countries have to meet strict inflation criteria before adopting the common European currency. And finally, the European Commission on Friday says Slovenia is well prepared to start using the euro currency as of January the 1st. The Commission says the former Yugoslav Republic has already taken measures to ensure a smooth changeover, but still needed to reassure its citizens that prices will remain stable as currencies change.
Thanks, Dieter. In Slovakia, plans by Canadian company Turnagain Gold Corporation to open a uranium mine near the eastern city of Košice have been met with strong opposition from locals. Almost 16,000 people signed a petition calling on the government to block the project. Anka Dragu reports from Bratislava.
The first attempt to exploit the uranium deposit in Jahovna took place in 1985, when the communist Czechoslovak government was planning to build a nuclear power plant near to Košice, which is the second largest city in Slovakia. The project did not advance past geological surveys because the communists lacked money for the whole project. In March 2005, the Canadian company Turnagain Gold Corporation began prospecting the area. In November last year, the company applied for permission from the regional mining office to continue prospecting the area with the prospect of opening a mine. Their application has been put on hold by the Košice region's environmental agency following protests from two non-governmental organizations, Greenpeace and Sosna, which gathered almost 16,000 signatures on a petition asking the Slovak Ministry of Environment to stop the mining project. Stefan Sabo, the head of Sosna, which is based in Košice, explains why they oppose the uranium mine.
This location is registered as a so-called protected bird area and a so-called Natura 2000 area. It means that these areas are protected following EU legislation. Except of that, this area is a protected area of drinking water sources for Košice. This location falls upon the Košice city forest, which is the second largest city forest in Europe. And the last case is that increased level of radioactivity is one of the most common reasons of cancer diseases.
Now, the eventual mine would create some jobs in a poverty-stricken area like Košice and Špiska, Nová Ves. How do you respond to those who say that the region needs these jobs and Slovakia, who is not very rich in raw materials, needs the uranium?
You know, the situation is that it is expected that the possible mining activities could create a maximum 60 jobs for 12 years in extremely unhealthy conditions. Concerning the uranium, as I know, Slovakia does not need for inner needs any uranium. 90% of the profit would be taken by a Canadian company, and only 10% would be taken by state, and this 10% would be not enough even to improve the conditions of destroyed region.
Thuringian Gold Corporation says the protest is illogical. Boris Bartalski, the general manager of Thuringian's Slovak daughter company Kremnica Gold, explains.
The deposits start only 300 meters under surface, and we should drill holes deeper than 500 meters. So when we thinking about the future opening of the mine, there should be only small underground mine, very deep under surface. We are not surprised with the protest of the Greenpeace, because we know what is the attitude of the Greenpeace to the nuclear energy, but we are very surprised the practice what the Greenpeace did there, because they break the law, they break the safety regulations, so we invite the police to protect our people, but also the protesters. Sosna probably don't understand the scale and mining operation, how it will be done in the future, if the deposit will be open.
Ecologists are afraid that Thuringian will lobby Slovak politicians and put pressure on the Ministry of Environment to give the green light to the project. Last week, a spokesperson for the ministry issued a statement saying that Thuringian hasn't submitted any final and complete documentation yet, and the ministry's experts will act according to the law. Ecologists plan to submit their petition to the European Commissioner for Environment, Stavros Dimas.
Anka Drago reporting from Bratislava. Poland's Ministry of Education says it's adopting a United States-style zero-tolerance approach to violent antisocial behaviour in Polish schools. In recent weeks, Polish media has given extensive coverage to cases in which schoolchildren were bullied, humiliated, and even driven to suicide by their peers. This report by Joanna Neifeld.
Following a series of incidents of school-related violence, most notably the suicidal death of a teenager molested by her peers in class, the Ministry of Education has intensified its efforts to cut down on crime and antisocial behavior in Polish schools. The ministry came up with a proposal of introducing single-sex education to Polish middle schools. Now another plan is put forward for consideration, the policy of zero tolerance to crime and violence on school premises.
The Minister of Education, Roman Giertych, intends to toughen the line on offenders who might be required to do community work or even be sent to heightened security centers.
For Mirosław Mikołajczyk, who has been a teacher at different levels for nearly 20 years now, the problem of out-of-control students is one that needs urgent intervention.
I've been observing in schools of different levels that violence, lack of respect not only to the teachers but to other students in schools has been quite normal and acceptable. Student rights were put above the idea of mutual respect among students and not only among themselves but also towards the teachers. Any attempts to stop aggressive and antisocial behaviors were countered by the students that we have rights and you are not allowed to. So it was really difficult to impose any discipline on students.
According to the new policy, students will be penalized more strictly than before, even if they commit a minor offense. For a punishment, they might have to sweep dead leaves from the schoolyard or clean the school toilet. Curse words, indecent clothes and behavior, as well as mobile phones, are to be forbidden in class. Professor Aleksander Nalaskowski, educationalist of the Mikołaj Kopernik University in Toruń, although generally in favor of stricter discipline at schools, has some reservations to the program.
I don't know the details of the program. It hasn't been released yet. I have to look at it. But from the leaks in the press, I have some reservations to punishing with work. It's one thing when a student who wrote graffiti on the wall has to repaint the wall or damage something and has to repair it. But there's something else to punish with work for vulgarisms. I would rather have such a student learn to recite Shakespeare's sonnets by heart to make sure he knows how to use language properly.
Fierce criticism of the program comes from the government's opposition. Extreme left-wing politician Marek Borowski had not seen the project yet, but was quick to label the government's idea as oppressive.
This is only the repression and the penalty from time to time. It's necessary, of course, but it cannot be a full, complete program. We should give to young people the perspective.
Mirosław Mikołajczyk, a teacher with nearly 20 years of experience, disagrees with this line of thinking.
As I see this, zero tolerance program seems to be running in a good direction, as it is trying to give the school back the tools, the pedagogical tools that the school has been deprived of. I believe that it is not the role of the teacher to act as a security guard or a policeman in school. Disrespect has to be embedded in the system itself. And this is what I think the latest minister's program is trying to achieve.
For Professor Nalaskovsky of the Mikołaj Kopernik University, the zero-tolerance approach is neither shocking nor revolutionary.
It's just about putting the already existing norms and regulations into practice. It's a reminder that there are rules that should be obeyed, but are not, especially when it comes to truancy, failing to do homework, vulgarisms and vandalism. That's how law works in society. If we stopped obeying traffic regulations, we would all be killed sooner or later. It's obvious. Fierce opposition to the zero-tolerance approach, at the same time having no alternative to offer, is in my view a sign of the unprofessional dispute that is going on.
The policy of zero tolerance to school violence was first implemented in the United States in the 1990s. According to the data published by the U.S. Department of Education, the number of crimes and violent incidents dropped by over one-third as a result of the popularization of the program. The latest polls conducted in Poland indicate that up to 80% of respondents thought that the law should penalize even 15-year-old offenders who might end up in detention centers on a par with adults.
Joanna Neifeld reporting. Czech political leaders are once again searching for a solution to the country's drawn-out political crisis. President Václav Klaus reappointed Civic Democratic Party leader Mirek Topolánek prime minister this week, even though Mr. Topolánek's first attempt ended in failure. So, is Mr. Klaus washing his hands of the whole business? And what does it mean for the country? Rob Cameron reports.
President Klaus, addressing reporters summoned to a special press conference at Prague Castle on Monday. He told them, essentially, that he was sick of waiting for the five parties in Parliament to agree on a solution which would lead the country out of the current deadlock. He directed particular ire at Jiří Paroubek, leader of the Social Democrats, for shooting down his proposal of a rainbow coalition to lead the country to early elections.
I think that it is not a realistic solution and it is not a possible solution because it is impossible to prepare realistic compromise between these four political parties.
It's 5 months since elections left Parliament split down the middle and the country in political limbo. There have been marathon talks, endless proposals, press conferences late into the night. And yet the Czech Republic still has no government, which raises the question, do the politicians have some sort of master plan or are they just making it up as they go along? Jiří Pehe, political analyst and former advisor to President Václav Havel.
I think that Mr. Klaus and to some extent Mr. Paroubek both have a clear strategy. They would like to create a grand coalition. They have realized for different reasons that there is little chance of creating a government based on either the Social Democratic Party or the Civic Democratic Party only. Not to speak of the fact that a grand coalition would be the best solution for President Klaus, who is facing re-election 14 months. However, Mr. Topolánek has stubbornly rejected this solution, and the fact that Klaus now appointed him for the second time may be actually Klaus's revenge.
Klaus's revenge? Well, let's wait and see just what Mr. Topolánek does with his second chance at forming a government. Mr. Klaus's decision does bring the country one step closer to early elections. Under the constitution, Parliament can only be dissolved and new elections held once three attempts at forming a government have failed. We're now on the second. If Mr. Topolánek gets nowhere, the last chance goes to the Speaker of the Lower House, a position held by the Social Democrats. Jiří Paroubek, former Prime Minister and leader of the Social Democrats.
I think that the idea of a great grand coalition is a realistic and good idea in this situation, and it is only one possibility to construct the government with the majority support in the parliament. And of course, in this type of solution, I said that I wanted to go not to the government, and to be only as a deputy of the parliament.
The people of the Czech Republic have heard the phrase realistic solution countless times over the last 5 months. But at the moment, it remains just that, a phrase and nothing else.
Rob Cameron in Prague. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope, all one word, .com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Inside Central Europe is a co-production from Radio Bologna, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, and Radio Slovenia International. Pannonia is the name the Romans gave to what is now Western Hungary. Now it's also the name of a military camp in the northern Afghan province of Baglan, where Hungarian troops recently took over from Dutch soldiers. Hungary now commands the local provincial reconstruction team of NATO's International Security Assistance Force. For a look at their work, Sándor Lajos of Radio Budapest spoke to Colonel Gábor Borondi of the Hungarian Defense Ministry.
At the moment, the main task is to provide a secure environment for the Afghan peoples. Additionally, we sent some materials like clothes and other materials for the Afghan peoples because their winter time is coming. The other main task is to organize training for the Afghan peoples and for the Afghan army.
You said that the task is to provide a secure condition. What are the security conditions in this region? Is this more or less dangerous than other Afghan areas?
It is very interesting at the moment because when the PRT was led by Dutch, the attack against the PRT was so high if I compare to the other PRTs. After the takeover handover ceremony, attackers don't carry out the attack against the Hungarian-led PRT. So now in Afghanistan is a very safe environment for the Afghans.
How big is this area that Hungarians are asked to provide security in?
If I compare with the territory of Hungary, approximately half of the territory of Hungary.
So that's quite a large area. What are the means of creating the security? Are they patrolling or training local people or training police or what?
What you said is very important. But the other things, which is so important, to make a very good connection with the locals. Hungary, very interesting in Afghanistan, is so popular nation. That is one reason that the security is increasing in the last time. And the second, what you said, we increase the number of the patrols.
What are the conditions of the environment? I guess they are quite different from those in Hungary.
The environment is different. As you know, the people are very, very poor. They are working in the agriculture and they have some industry which was built 30, 40 or 50 years ago. So it's not so modern. And the third one, as usual in Afghanistan, they have a big market and the market activity is so high in this area of Baglan.
Colonel Gábor Borondi of the Hungarian Defense Ministry speaking to Sándor Lajos. It can be tough for independent filmmakers to compete against mainstream Hollywood blockbusters, but there are audiences who want more from a movie than entertainment. And in Slovenia, documentary films are drawing ever-increasing crowds, and that's led to the third Slovenian Documentary Film Festival. Ksenija Samardzija-Matul has the story.
From the 2nd to the 8th of November, the Dogma Festival 2006 took place in Maribor and it featured 46 documentaries from 18 countries. The competition program, Interregional Retrospective, focused on documentaries in European countries that are not members of the European Union. Tomáš Zaniuk of the organizing team explains.
The aim of the competitive category is to promote quality movies from the countries which are geographically in Europe, but not in European Union, which means that the movie makers in that countries don't get the chance to get the funds of the European Union and other funds which are available to EU documentarists.
A Croatian documentary about the generation of young people whose lives have been powerfully affected by the recent war won the award at the 3rd Dogma International Festival of Documentary Film in Maribor. The award was conferred on Goran Devic, author and director of I Have Nothing Nice to Say to You. The director himself, a member of the generation he portrayed in the film, was inspired by the story of the 1991 unsolved murder murder of Lyubica Solar, a young woman from Sisak. The jury, composed of Indian director Atul Gupta, British political film expert Katie McGeehan and Slovenian director Bojan Labović, also conferred a special mention award to the Serbian-Montenegrin film Miner's Opera. The jury agreed that this year's films at the festival were high quality. Katie McGeehan of the British Film Institute.
Well, firstly, I'd just like to say what a high standard of filmmaking entered this competition. The films were extremely varied in terms of length, in terms of subject matter, style, political reportage, hour-length documentaries, and more artistic films using archival footage.
It must be hard to be in the jury and decide which film is the best, so I asked Katie McGeehan what her criteria were.
So personally, I was just trying to look at each film in its own right and decide, you know, whether I thought it fulfilled its premise, tried to figure out what the director's intention was.
Another member of the jury, Indian director Atul Gupta, found it hard to decide as he loved all the films.
Personally, I was very disturbed that I have to choose which one is good. All of them are excellent. Criteria is that what defines a good documentary? How many questions does it raise with you? So these were the criteria with which I looked at the films.
In the end, the jury reached a unanimous decision and awarded the film I Have Nothing Nice to Say to You. For Inside Central Europe, this is Ksenia Samardzija-Matul.
Thanks, Ksenia. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Radio Polonia, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague, and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. Join me and the rest of the team next week. Thank you.